Hello and welcome back to The Loyal Son Show. That's at The Loyal Sons on Twitter. Follow us there and follow us here for Pitt Sports content you won't want to miss. If you love the prodigal son returning home and hate tampering, this is the place for you. The Loyal Son Show, a safe, sunshiny place for your Pitt Athletics fix. Brought to you by Rendine Consulting, providing investment managers assistance with technology integration. Today is April 4th, and we've had ourselves a bit of an up and down weekend, haven't we?
Well, Thursday night was just about the highest high I could have imagined as a Pitt Panther and Pittsburgh Steelers fan. And Friday, I wanted to pull my hair out, but yeah, it was eventful. Probably the most eventful April weekend you'll have for the Pitt football program.
Yeah, Pitt was in the center of the football universe for good and bad reasons, obviously. But it is cool to say that Pitt is the center of the football universe. NFL, biggest storyline, QB1, and college football. I mean, we're just changing the game again. We started the fake slide, changing the rule book, and now the state of college football as we know it is different.
I was really excited when I realized that there was going to be a Kenny Pickett rule on the books for college football in 2022. Wasn't expecting a Jordan Addison rule to probably shortly follow, and definitely not for the same cool reasons, but yeah, you could say the last 4 or 5 days have perfectly encapsulated what it means to be a Pitt fan. We felt the highest highs imaginable, as evidenced by our now kind of viral reaction video to finding out Kenny Pickett was drafted in the first round, 20th overall, by the Pittsburgh Steelers. And then the lowest lows, like, licensing and transfer rules that the NCAA was forced into allowing but intentionally did not put any parameters on. So, you know, losing the best player in the program.
Yeah, that about sums it up. You had a good quote earlier before we started recording, and this is what I want some of our fans to take away. I know we're not all, not all of our listeners are Steeler fans. Not every Pitt fan is a Steeler fan, but I'd rather have 15 years of Kenny Pickett than one more year of Jordan Addison. So
yeah,
that's all I needed to pick me up.
I think for the next, I don't even know how long, anytime I'm feeling down, feeling nervous, feeling gloomy, I'm just going to think, well, Kenny Pickett's a Pittsburgh Steeler, and everything will be okay again.
That literally happened to me Friday morning. Yeah. I had a nail in one of my tires. I had to get replaced. Like $125 kick off my Friday, and I was like, that's okay, we got Pickett last night.
Yeah.
And as we are a safe, sunshiny place for your Pitt Athletics fix, it only makes sense that we open with the highest of highs that we felt. Kenny Pickett, Pittsburgh Steelers. We have been manifesting this since he was a sophomore in college, and it is here, and it's something that we get to enjoy for years and years to come. Gentlemen, we saw the video of our reactions and all of our friends' reactions. Take me through each of your personal gut reactions when Franco was up there, you know, making funny faces and hooting and hollering with that card.
I mean, I just didn't think it was actually going to happen. It just was too perfect. Things don't usually work out that way when it's just working out way too make-believe-ish, and when I heard Kenny come out of his mouth, that was probably the most excited I've been. I mean, there's nothing else you can really compare it to. It's not the same as a game where, you know, you don't know the outcome of the game. It's like, this was building up for several months, and it was like, it started out as, oh, it is possible that we would get him. And then there was like a month where we were like, oh, well, he's not going to get out of the top 10. And then even approaching the draft, it felt like, you know, it would be a long shot for him to get to us at 20. And then the day of, it was like, they don't think any of these teams in the top 10, 15 are going to take him. So for it to all work out that way, it's unbelievable. And I can't really imagine we'll ever experience anything like that again as sports fans.
I think over the last couple of weeks, I really came to terms with the fact that there's a very good chance that the Steelers would take Desmond Ridder, Malik Willis, or some other bum QB in the draft and not pick it, and I'd be forced to watch them struggle for a couple of years, the Steelers to sputter into mediocrity, and then just feel disinterested and pissed off at the Steelers for not taking Kenny Pickett. But the complete polar opposite happened. They took Kenny Pickett. Also got some good receivers for him, too. I mean, I'm excited for Steelers football more than I have been in a long time. So, yay Thursday.
I have multiple people tell me how happy they were for me. Like I'm Kenny's brother or, like, father. I have multiple people tell me, oh, I'm just so happy for you guys.
We deserve this.
We do, and Dylan, it was such an emotional roller coaster for the past couple months, you know, let alone the last couple years, all the fighting we had to do in Kenny's honor when he had, you know, the 13-9 years back to back, yeah, where we had to scream until we were blue in the face. No. He had 8 touchdowns, either dropped or a guy tackled at the 1 yard line. This is a great quarterback. You just can't see it. And it really became grueling over the draft process because we had a lot of hope. Hey, maybe the Steelers could get him. The Steelers made a little late season run, put him back at 20, didn't think Kenny would be there. Or maybe we thought Kenny would be there, but, you know, depend on how everyone else shook out. He continued to outperform the other quarterbacks at the combine and, you know, at his pro day. And he started to rise up, and it wasn't... I had completely given up on the idea that we could get Kenny Pickett until about a week before the draft when, you know, insiders were saying, I don't know, a couple of these teams might sit out on quarterbacks this year.
I'll say this. It was so poetic because about 3 years ago, we would watch college football at Smoke and Joe's from noon to midnight, basically. And I remember going to war, like screaming at our friends who are Penn State fans about how Kenny Pickett is better than Sean Clifford, and they were calling me an idiot. And I was
looking at you like you had 4 eyeballs.
Yeah, and I was like about ready to like throw fists with them. And fast forward 3 years, we are in Smoke and Joe's again, and some of those same friends are sitting there watching their favorite NFL team take Kenny Pickett while the other guy is not going to end up like Kenny Pickett.
No, not at all.
No.
Honestly, I as a Steeler fan, would have made peace a little bit with one of the other guys. But even if we got Malik Willis and they taught him how to throw a football to a person and not just, like, launch it out of the stadium, it still would have hurt knowing that it could have been Kenny.
Yeah.
And my... Admittedly, my Steelers fandom had sort of waned a little bit in recent years. I don't know if it's just because when my love for college and you know, the amateurism of the game grew, you know, watching such a polished and finely tuned product bored me a little bit. It could also be because as an adult forming my own moral compass, cheering for Ben Roethlisberger got a little bit harder. But this, I am as back in on the Steelers as you can possibly be.
Yeah, I think mine wasn't my moral compass as much as it was Ben couldn't throw a ball more than 10 yards anymore. But that's a discussion for another day. Yeah, this was crazy. I remember sitting there, I believe it was at 18 Tennessee was picking, and we were sitting around like, I don't know, it kind of feels like they could take a quarterback. Tennessee, you know, sit behind Tannehill a year, then let him go. They're paying him a lot of money.
Uh-huh.
And we're like, oh, I could deal with a trip to Nashville to go see Kenny play. Like, that might not be a terrible situation. And then we were like starting to just make peace with ourselves. Like, we'll just have to cheer for another team, for Kenny. And then he was there at 20. And that was about some of the most nerve-wracking 10 minutes of my life, was watching that clock tick down for the Steelers and waiting for that pick is in to appear on.
Franco babbled about how he loves the draft and probably like what he had at the buffet before he went up there to announce.
He got a free meal out of it.
Yeah, just spit it out, Franco, and he finally did.
But in hindsight, he was dropping as many hints for us as he possibly could.
Yeah.
He gets the card from Goodell and goes, wow, and looks up at Goodell and goes, are you kidding me? And
he said, this is incredible.
And you see Goodell, like, shake his head and mouth, I know. And then Franco gets up to the podium, and when he said, I
he
love
didn't
this.
He didn't bring the Joe Paw cut out either.
No.
He just left it backstage.
No. Nor did he unearth the statue for such an occasion. But he was, to his credit, we rip on Franco, he was genuinely excited, and I do think in some way it was a symbolic gesture, an olive branch, if you will, between Pitt and Penn State Steeler fans to say, like, hey, this is our guy. But when he said, I love this, it really, something in my brain went, it's happening. He wasn't going to say that about some kid from Liberty, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I, till the very last second, I was holding out hope, but I was not getting my hopes up too much, and that first syllable, Ken. Well, remember when Kenyon Green, or whoever,
it was Kenyon Green, yeah. And he went to the Houston Texans, who also could have possibly been in the market for a quarterback, and I swear, he...
The air went out of the room for a second.
Oh my God, you could have heard a pin drop for half a second, and I think Roger Goodell, almost as like an insult to us, just really emphasized that Kenyon Green.
Yeah, so that happened. So we felt like we dodged a bullet there, but yeah, when you heard Kenny, it was pandemonium in the South Side.
Before we move on, the feeling afterwards was kind of crazy because I feel like we celebrated for a matter of three picks. Like, the next time I looked up at the screen, it was like pick 23, and you know,
the draft is almost over.
And each pick takes like 15 minutes, so that just kind of gives you a reference of like how on cloud nine we were. But after things settled down, a couple people left. There was just a group of us still up there, just sitting around, like high fiving each other. It reminded me of like the guys on the winning Super Bowl team just like hanging out on the field with all the confetti on the field, like, wow, can't believe we did it, guys. Like, they just don't want to leave the field because they're so excited. They don't want the night to end. That was us. That was our Super Bowl. Like dapping each other up, like, we did it.
We were congratulating each other like we won something. And Dylan, to your point, people congratulating you, we all put our cell phones in like on one table. Everybody that you saw in that video put their cell phones in one place so that, you know, no picks could get spoiled. Because if you had spoiled the Steelers pick, you legitimately might have gotten jumped in the crowd.
You're being thrown down the stairs.
Like, blood would have been drawn. But I picked up my phone and had like 8 to 10 text messages congratulating me from non-Steeler fans. Like, personally congratulating me on the job that we had done.
Yeah, we earned it. We earned this.
We really did. So let's, before we have to go talk about the other thing, let's really revel in, you know, this high that is higher than the lows that we could possibly experience, even in life. I mean, you can chop my arm off right now, at least Kenny Pickett's the Steelers quarterback.
As long as Kenny's got his arm, I'll PR.
And if he didn't, I would be at UPMC stat, you know, with a saw and my arm in a bucket of ice for Kenny.
And his hands would be bigger then than they are now.
It's enough out of you. We never have to talk about hand size again.
Okay.
Just wait until the first strip sack, or the first all right, rainy day.
So, like, 2025?
So, one small thing here is I've never felt more pressure as a Steeler fan.
Oh, my God.
I feel like the expectations now are, if Kenny doesn't look great out of the gate, I'm going to have some people to answer to.
We're going to live and die by every snap.
Yeah, yeah.
When he takes over as quarterback.
Yeah, if he just, like, underthrows his first ever career pass, I'm just going to, like, feel like I got punched in the gut. Like...
But I think the Steelers did a great job of ensuring he has the tools around him to be successful early on. So why don't we talk about that a little bit? He got three position guys that could be immediate impact on the Steelers offense. It really gives you the sense that the Steelers are trying to build around him and give him the best opportunity to start off on the right foot.
Yeah, I thought that spoke volume, especially going and getting Pickens, and then a couple rounds later, getting Austin, Calvin Austin from Memphis. I feel like they're setting this up, and with all the help they went and got with the O-line and free agency, it feels like this is being set up to where the Steelers aren't rebuilding. They're not in the business of rebuilding or taking years off, especially when they have, you know, only so many years left with Cam Hayward, so many years left with Minkah Fitzpatrick, you know, some of these other guys with, you know, contracts coming up. These guys are in the prime of their careers. They want to compete, and they went and got Kenny because they think he can help them win now. I don't know if he'll start week one. You know, kind of feels like that could be a bit of a waiting period, wait for him to be ready, but it feels like this is a move that the Steelers think can help them stay competitive and win playoff games now.
Which is why they did not take Malik Willis, who probably won't start for just a year.
No, yeah, and I mean, you can take that as like a jab at Malik Willis, but I think everyone knows that he was more of a project, and you know, Steelers aren't looking for a project at quarterback. They're looking for it. They found a guy who they think can come and compete right away and win the starting job and win them football games.
Would Pickett win the job over Ben last year? People are asking.
I don't think anybody has ever asked that, John.
I did.
Probably not, the just Steelers, because of the symbolism.
Well,
was he the best quarterback who played football in Heinz Field last year? Well, I guess called Heinz Field home last year. I'm sure there were some really good NFL quarterbacks at Heinz Field last year.
I get what you're saying, and yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think we've veered out of our lane enough to probably annoy a couple of our listeners. So I want to pose this question to you guys. What does this selection and having Kenny as the starting quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers mean for the Pitt program going forward?
It's a pretty easy selling point, I think, to recruits. Mike Tomlin and Kevin Colbert were in the same facility as Kenny for 5 years. They were able to talk to everyone in the facility from, you know, Pat Narduzzi to the cafeteria workers, that they could walk down and get any piece of information they wanted about Kenny. They could walk out any day and go evaluate Kenny Pickett. There was all these videos of Mike Tomlin smiling at Malik Willis's pro day or at the combine when he's making these throws, and every writer took that and ran with it. Oh, the Steelers love Malik Willis. They love Ritter. Meanwhile, they had to do, you know, research on these guys in a couple of months that they've been able to do on Kenny for the last 4 or 5 years. And that up close and understanding and just being comfortable with Kenny to put the franchise in his hands moving forward, they were able to see it hands-on. And I think that speaks volumes. Same thing happened with James Conner a few years ago. They were there. They saw the impact that James Conner had on the football team and the program. You know, you're in front of NFL eyes every day, whether you're dealing with them directly or not.
I thought of it a lot also in the sense of, if Kenny Pickett can rise to a level where he becomes an icon in Pittsburgh, you know, Ben Roethlisberger is the greatest to ever, you know, play quarterback at Pittsburgh. Even if Terry Bradshaw had 4 rings. Terry will tell you, Ben was the best, most talented. But if Kenny can achieve that icon status in the city, I think that means so much for the fan base of the Pitt Panthers, for engagement in Pitt football. That is brand awareness on a level that Pitt hasn't had in a long time. And I think it's more likely to happen than not, because even if Kenny isn't, you know, burning the world down like Ben did for a couple years, he has so many traits that Pittsburghers value in their football players. He is tough. He is gritty. He is humble. He plays with a chip on his shoulder. You tear his shoulder, he's coming back into the game. Give me the shot and put me back in. You know, that kind of attitude is what this city prides itself on, and I think he's a perfect fit as a Steelers quarterback, and I think that Pitt is going to get some trickle-down love from the Yinzer community as a result, and we could finally see, you know, those that upper ring of seats in Heinz Field start to fill up in subsequent years.
Yeah. I think that you two mentioned some big aspects of the significance of this. Maybe the biggest will be recruiting for Pitt. Pat Narduzzi can bring in a quarterback recruit, take him to the facility and say, oh yeah, look over there on that practice field right next to ours.
Have Kenny jog over, that's Kenny Pickett, put his hair back and say, hey kid, how you doing?
Yeah. It doesn't get easier to sell a kid on Pitt than that. Like, that's,
this is my old coach. I love playing for Pat.
Pitt was the best thing that ever happened to me. I want to leave.
I liked it so much I wouldn't leave. Wink, wink.
I still live in Oakland. Ha ha ha.
They're gonna have a shtick down, him and Coach Narduzzi. Yeah. By the way, I was
like, hey, at 5:42, come out of the film room and walk down the hall and bump into me while I'm talking to this recruit.
It does lend itself to some huge benefits to Pitt, and I think we saw that Friday morning we got a commitment from a 4-star quarterback.
Not so subtly. I'm excited about his first name.
Yeah. Kenny Minchie, 4 stars out of Tennessee. We're actually going to be on the lookout for a video we're going to put out. We watched his highlight tape for the first time and recorded our reaction. And first spoiler, he is good.
Yes.
Second spoiler, we were impressed. So, you know, be on the lookout for that. But yeah, that is, he was Pitt's number one quarterback prospect for, you know, the class of 2023, and I think there were some growing concerns about the quality and number of quarterbacks we were talking to, as well as the interest that they had in Pitt. And for the number one quarterback that they were talking to throw his hands up and commit the next morning, I think that's just a taste of things to come with, you know, having a brand ambassador like Kenny Pickett.
Yeah, 100%. Said it since his freshman year, but he's just kind of been a really good ambassador for the university and for the program. And him, you know, staying in the same facility is just going to, you know, amplify that for years to come. So excited. Can't imagine I will ever be that excited on NFL draft night ever again.
Nope. Or the day my children are born, honestly.
Yeah, or when I get married. Or, yeah. Any of that crap.
They're all fighting for second place.
Any of that junk.
Well, third place. ACC championship, pick it drafted by Steelers, wedding day / birth of child.
Who knows? In terms of like sheer rush of dopamine and adrenaline, I put the Steelers taking Kenny over the ACC championship. If for no other reason than we had that game in hand by like 5 minutes into the third quarter, so it was like we're riding high and all, but there wasn't like one instant moment of right. oh my god.
Right. Kind of agree. Yeah, that 30 seconds will be unrivaled, like attendance date.
Okay. What, you thought they weren't gonna catch a stray in here?
That's actually like the third they've gotten.
All right, so
is it time for the bad stuff?
At least give us a 30-second breather. We'll get a little transition clip in here.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system.
Lincoln Riley
is not available. At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Lincoln Riley.
Face. First, take a big step back and literally f*** your own face! Now, I don't know what kind of pan-Pacific bullshit power play you're trying to pull here, but
Jordan Addison
is my territory. So whatever you're thinking, you better think again. Otherwise, I'm going to have to head down there, and I will rain down on a godly f***ing firestorm upon you. You're going to have to call the f***ing United Nations and get a f***ing binding resolution to keep me from f***ing destroying you. I am talking scorched earth, motherfucker. I will massacre you. I will f*** you up.
Well, boys, sons, as the old adage goes, the universe She gives and takes.
I can't really imagine a higher and lower low coming like to fruition within just around 24 hours of each other with the pit football.
I can't. That is legitimately the best thing that could have happened in that window and the worst thing.
I think it could only be rivaled by winning a national championship and then
the team plane going down the next day
into the Cathedral of Learning. Which honestly, given Pitt football's history, might happen if we ever scrap our way into the college football championship. Knock on wood, yeah. So let's walk through this. I think Pitt fans have been following this very closely, and it's important to understand how we got here.
So timeline, so around, I don't know, 10 p.m., 9:30, 10 p.m., started to see some rumors, some tweets come out?
No, I think it was before that, because I remember I was dog-sitting this weekend. Shout out Chloe and Stella for a great weekend, two great dogs. And
loyal dogs. They would never leave your side.
Loyal dogs of Pittsburgh, yeah. They
would never, you know, never mind.
You know, if I offered either of those dogs $3 million to leave me...
3 million dog biscuits.
I don't think they'd do it.
Right.
Anyway, that part means nothing. But just for timeline purposes, I remember it was before 8 because I was going on a walk with them when we first saw someone say, like, hey, this kid just hopped in my DMs. It was a buddy of ours who you know, is very close to the Pitt program. Said someone was in his DMs saying that, like, Addison was getting poached by another school. And I think he said Alabama. And I think we laughed it off because I believe this particular person in their Pitt scoops is, like, a good 0 for a dozen on his career. And how many times have we heard, you know, oh, this school's talking to Addison. This school's trying to offer him money. We heard it about Texas. We heard it about Alabama.
Yeah, the Addison talk has been consistent, yet never felt like it had much legs.
No.
Yeah, people have been called foolish and, like, made fun of for saying it. Like, people who are worried about him going to Texas were, like, kind of laughed at. People are like, why would they do that? I mean, Pitt's a better situation, all this and that.
But there was enough smoke to the Texas rumors that there was a post on the Lair about it where they got a quote from Jordan Addison. What did he say? Something about,
I'm here to finish my career at Pitt. That might not be verbatim, but, you know.
Promise to play next year, yeah, at Pitt.
Yeah.
Interesting. But so those rumors came out, and it wasn't until, like, another person in our Pitt football group message came in and was like, you guys, I heard the same thing, but from someone that I trust. And then we all started texting people that we knew that were kind of involved with the program. You know, some guys were employed, some guys who used to play for them, you know, just started leveraging all of our resources. Weren't in panic mode yet, but we're close. They all came back saying the same thing.
Yeah. And then I saw Filippone, I think, tweeted out that there was either one of the fan guys tweeted out that, like, big news from Oakland tonight, Jordan Addison's going to be leaving the program. And usually, you know, those guys won't just spout out anything, but I wasn't sold enough that, you know, these guys might be hearing the same rumors we were.
Because Pony and, you know, I do like their show. He has a tendency to just kind of say stuff sometimes.
Right. Yeah. So I was like, ah, this can't be that big. And then, sure enough, source after source throughout the night, as you refresh Twitter, there was a new tweet about Jordan Addison going to USC.
So before we get any further, let's just say it is 8 o'clock p.m. on Monday. And he's, like, not officially in the portal, but he's, like, in the portal, right? That's, like, where we're at right now. He's, like, in the process of entering the portal.
I think the consensus is that he has given Pitt his paperwork.
Yeah.
by the time we release this episode, we could sound very stupid and things can have changed drastically, as it has. There's a fluid situation. But yeah, as of right now, it's consensus is that he submitted paperwork and Pitt had 48 hours to... Well, 2 days. So it's unsure if it's 48 hours or if it's 2 business days, but he should be in the portal at some point Monday or Tuesday.
And granted, on top of all of those asterisks, asteri, little star thingies, every source I'm seeing is still saying, like, still a chance he returns to Pitt. I'm not holding my breath, but I'm just trying to cover all of our bases because when we release this in 48 hours, I don't want to sound stupid.
Right.
Never.
But...
We've never sounded stupid.
No, we've never sounded stupid once. But, so, this is Friday night, and it's all starting to pour out a little bit, and we haven't quite heard numbers yet about it, but, you know, we hear that there's a significant push, specifically from the University of Southern California, and that it's really has his attention. But at this point, Friday night, quick question, was he in the portal yet?
No, I don't believe he was.
Wait, then how were they able to... talk to him about NIL deals and transferring if he's not in the portal? Isn't that illegal? Is that tampering?
I couldn't possibly be. No. But anyway, at this point, John, where are you?
I'll just say I'm off the grid. I'm a little worried about being doxxed by some USC fans who I will like most certainly upset in the next couple of days. But yeah, I was legitimately off the grid from like 8 a.m. Friday until about midnight Friday, and then back off the grid all of Saturday, and then Sunday, and then back to the real world Monday. But, yeah, I got a chance to check my phone around midnight, and I left all the group chats I was in, except one with you guys. And the first text I saw was, "So the NIL arms race is heating up, huh?" And then something about, yeah, did you hear how much they're giving him? I heard it's like this much a week or it'll be 7 figures. And I was like, what is this about? Because there was like no context to it. It was like, whatever. And then I scroll down further and I see Jordan Addison's name. And I'm like, hold the phones here. I open up Twitter and then immediately see like hundreds of tweets about it from everybody from... Pitt Twitter guys we follow, to guys who write for ESPN, to every single sports personality talking about how this is going to change college football. And yeah, I think right before this I told you guys I felt like the balloon person from those drug commercials that is sitting on a couch and just deflates. That's how I felt.
Above the influence.
Yeah.
So that must have been fun to wake up to, but Dylan and I were following it every step, like, I think second by second, every tweet.
Yeah, it was weird, because periodically I could check my phone and would send, so is he, like, officially gone, or, like, what's the deal? And you guys, like, couldn't give a straight answer. I'm like, well, why not? And eventually I realized this is just, like, bizarre.
So...
And uncharted territory.
It was uncharted territory. And at first this was just... Pitt Twitter going bonkers. This got picked up nationally quickly. I don't know what my expectation was. I guess I didn't have an expectation for the richest football program in America buying a player away from us, but it definitely wasn't this quickly. I think the first national writer to get on it was Peter Thamel, and he did something that I'm not familiar with his work. I don't know if I will ever read his work again, but I will always be bitter towards him because he was the first person to float the whole USC is a potential landing spot for Jordan Addison, because he grew up in Fredericksburg, Maryland, and Caleb Williams grew up in Washington, D.C., also the DMV area.
That connection could be, you know, a reason for this landing spot.
And first of all, they grew up over an hour away from each other. Second of all, the DMV is a tri-state area. Do you know how vague of a connection? No, it's not even a tri-state area because it's what? Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, and the District of Columbia. So it's basically a quad state area. That is their connection. Are you kidding me? And that gave all the USC fans that, you know, and all of the college football writers and anyone that would want to justify a movement like this ammo. And it went from, oh, they knew each other from playing ball in the DMV area to Jordan Addison and Caleb Williams are best friends. They've wanted to play together since they were teenagers, and he allowed that to happen. So that was Friday, you know, heading into Saturday morning.
I'd like to put a reward out there. 10 Loyal Sons points to anyone who can find a picture of Caleb Williams and Jordan Addison together. Or any evidence that they've ever hung out in any capacity.
There are nearly 6 million people that live in the DMV area. It's not like they'll have been like, Pennsylvania, and they're the only two good football players from there, and they knew each other from that.
I would honestly be willing to raise that prize to 100 American dollars if I can get a picture of Jordan Addison and Caleb Williams together. Because they kept waiting on it as their relationship grew from two kids who grew up in the same tri-state area to, like, the thickest of thieves. You know, what was missing was any evidence that they've ever spoken. So we're getting, you know, a little bit distracted here, but so this is about Friday at midnight. At this point, Dylan, had you heard any, like, estimate of what the offer he was getting from USC was?
It was anywhere between $2 million and $2.5 million in a house in LA.
Exactly what I had heard.
Right. So, I mean, is that just a made-up number out of thin air, or is that something that was negotiated between, you know, someone involved with the USC program and Jordan Addison kid who was not actively in the transfer portal? Was he actively in the transfer portal? No, I don't believe he was at that point.
Nah, he still isn't. Okay, let's put a pin in that number. Saturday. Did you get any sleep, Dylan?
Very little.
John?
No.
Same. Okay. So Saturday, I think, was a bit more of a blur. I can't remember specific details. I just remember a lot of conversations, a lot of refreshing Twitter, a lot of texts and DMs going around trying to get to the bottom of things. And Saturday early in the day is when it kind of felt like Pitt was fighting back, right?
Yeah. Everything, you know. It had gone from, it's a done deal, he's gone, Pitt can't match it, to Pitt is pulling out all the stops. Aaron Donald is calling him. Rumors of David Tepper getting involved.
Kenny Pickett was apparently pretty involved, which, come on, you can't give Pat Narduzzi and Kenny Pickett one day to celebrate before they have to drop everything to appease a 20-year-old.
I'll say this. I kind of got all this in one chunk whenever I scrolled through, like, legitimately 2 days' worth of tweets. I think my favorite part of the whole thing was hearing that Pat Narduzzi allegedly called Lincoln Riley to tell him how, like, displeased he was about the whole situation and how nothing is above board and how it's kind of all bullshit. I would love to hear that conversation if it happened. I'm positive that Pat Narduzzi dropped the word horse shit like 3 or 4 times, and Lincoln Riley was kind of sitting there like cowering in fear over this coach thousands of miles away, chewing him out.
That was certainly a development on Saturday. There were rumors that Pat Narduzzi had called him multiple times too, and this is my favorite part, quote unquote, express displeasure.
I bet there was a lot of displeasure being expressed.
And the Titanic was a boat accident.
Right.
So the whole day was just a back and forth of, well, these former Pitt legends are involved. Chris Bickle is going to make sure he doesn't go anywhere. Oh, USC raised the offer. Pitt countered. By the end of the day, it had become, I think, more apparent that even as it had gone back and forth, that it was more likely he was going to enter the transfer portal. I had heard that the figure was bumped up on that Pitt was able to get together some funds and match the offer, and USC was immediately able to punch up from that $2.5 million mark. I do know, however, and this is another smoking gun here, Jordan Addison was photographed in full pit gear and his team backpack in an airport in Las Vegas.
That's my favorite thing about all of, I guess, transfers now, but it was always the coaching search or the coaching carousel. People would see that a private jet from South Bend is on its way to Baton Rouge. Wonder who's on that. Brian Kelly to LSU, maybe? I guess we have to start tracking flights for transfer.
This one was funny because it was just like Jordan Addison on a Spirit flight. Definitely just found the cheapest flight.
Yeah, the USC boosters.
Like $80.
USC boosters couldn't get them first class.
I think they would have been too smart to do that. That would be a serious paper trail.
Right.
Because I'm pretty sure you can just like look that up, can't you? Like
very easily.
Like, oh, Jordan Addison.
Should we, just in case? Should we look that up?
We'll get into that, yeah. No, but the funny thing about when coaches do it is it's like private plane, under the radar, not a public airport, hat pulled over their eyes, sunglasses, all black. Jordan Addison is in the Las Vegas airport in a pit team-issued bag with number 3 on it. I guess college kids have a lot more to learn.
Yeah. And then there were people on Twitter. The people on Twitter have been the worst, and we won't get too deep into that, but people on Twitter, well, there was a draft in Las Vegas. Didn't you know that was going on? Like, oh, yeah, I'm sure he just hopped on a plane and wanted to go watch the third, fourth, fifth rounds of the draft.
But then it was formally confirmed later that night that he was in, that it was a connecting flight and that he was in L.A. Chris Peek broke that story. And I know Chris Peek is a Pitt journalist, but I tend to trust that he wouldn't run something unless he was very sure. So he ran it.
Also, poor Chris Peek went on vacation.
Poor man.
I think he arrived on Friday. I don't know the exact itinerary of his vacation, but went on vacation. The biggest Pitt story in a decade.
Yeah.
And longer than I can't really think anything else compares to this. I mean, but
Mike Haywood.
Yeah, I mean this drops but
probably way bigger.
Probably way bigger in the whole landscape of college football. This breaks like as he's arriving at his beach house or wherever he went. I don't have those details, but shout out to him for his coverage. It's unbelievable. But what a 24-48 hours. I mean, it's still going right now. We don't even know what's going on right now. I saw something that said Alabama and Texas are back in the mix for it.
Well, I mean, honestly, if you are a college football program with deep pockets and you've spent the last 48 hours watching USC openly recruit a player on another team, why not? Yeah. Throw your hat in the ring. If you have the money, go for it.
Yeah.
And what's the NCAA going to do? Sanction Alabama and USC and Texas?
Yeah, I'm sure. But it's... And, you know, credit... And I say that sarcastically to USC fans because they've been fighting the tampering allegations online as hard as they can by being consciously obtuse. What do you mean he's on the West Coast seeing USC? Some people just like to vacation in LA. What do you mean they dropped a bag for him? He grew up in the same area as Caleb Williams. What do you mean? Why would he want to leave Pitt? You guys replaced your quarterback, offensive coordinator, and wide receiver coach, as if he wouldn't have a whole new coaching staff and whole new team going to USC. But all of these rumors that Pitt fans heard behind the scenes about offers just kept getting reflected by real journalists with real sources.
I think the USC fans have been insufferable because they're acting as if their team has been the God's gift to college football recently. They haven't. They've been struggling. Sure, they got a new coach, but that's another thing. The worst part is the people in the media who are acting as if this is just like any other transfer. It's like some guy has a better opportunity and he's taking it. No one's knocking Jordan Addison for taking $3 million. Like, I don't know if I'd be able to pass that up. It's the way it's being done.
It's life-changing they're money. Acting like this, they're it's life-changing money.
They're like, this is the same thing as Keaton Slovis for answering the pit. No, it isn't. He entered the portal and then Pitt gave him a call. This is not the same, and I don't understand how people can justify it,
though. It would be one thing if Jordan Addison, in January, after the Peach Bowl, entered his name in the transfer portal and said, you know, I'm pursuing opportunities, you know, through NIL to explore my options as I prepare for my final year before entering the NFL draft. I would have been upset. At that time, I would have been pissed off.
Would have been a tough pill to swallow.
It would have been a tough pill to swallow. But to 48 hours before the transfer portal, the deadline to enter the transfer portal, there's news coming out that USC has a dollar figure in place for Jordan Addison's transfer there. Prior to Jordan Addison's name being in the transfer portal, and it's not at all the same thing.
And 3 months after Jordan Addison said in no uncertain terms, I love Pitt. I'm finishing my career at Pitt. I'm playing for Pitt in 2022 in response to rumors of schools trying to get him to enter the transfer portal.
Also, like, less than a week after PGT Trucking gave him, like, $100,000.
Yeah.
But, that's for another day. But, it's ridiculous, and, once again, I don't blame Jordan Addison for taking $3 million to go play football in LA for a year. I blame the system that allows that to happen.
Yeah, and just so we're clear, Pitt fans, your 60-year-old ass should not be tweeting at a 20-year-old calling him a traitor. Especially a 20-year-old who, I don't know what his socioeconomic status was growing up, but $3 million is life-changing money for just about anybody I've ever met in my entire life, and I would assume that that means the same for him. And yes, I think it's disloyalty, and, you know, maybe I can sit here and say I wouldn't have even had those conversations if I were him and if I were committed to Pitt, but you went to the University of Pittsburgh, you man listening to us. You are too intelligent to be the kind of person that sits on a burner and shit-talks a 20-year-old.
Yeah, 100%. And thing is, you know, I've seen people say, you know, Jordan Addison doesn't owe Pitt anything. You know, this is the nature of the business. And you as a Pitt fan don't owe Jordan Addison your fandom. You can actively root against him if he goes and plays at USC or Alabama and Texas. Don't need to tweet at him from your burner, but if you feel... if it would give you comfort to root against him on Saturdays next fall, you have the right to do that as well.
We'll probably be joining you.
100%.
Honestly. I was just starting to get frustrated, and believe me, I wanted to say all sorts of things on Twitter, and maybe through, like, a voice modulator on a voicemail, maybe, to anyone involved in this, but I just kept thinking about how pathetic Oklahoma was in the wake of Lincoln Riley leaving, and how badly I don't want Pitt to be that. And I've seen a little bit too much buddy-buddy between Oklahoma and Pitt on social media and just in the media in general, and I want to say, knock it off. We are not them. We understand why Malibu might be more attractive of a destination than Norman, Oklahoma. The way they acted after Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams left was pathetic and fully different from our situation.
Yes. There's a difference between a coach getting a ton of money thrown at them, because this has happened forever. Coaches have always been poached by programs willing to drop a bag on a coach.
We poached Pat Narduzzi from Michigan State.
He is also...
James Franklin was poached from Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
It's literally how coaching works.
Yeah. They're also employees under contract. Jordan Addison was a player actively on the Pitt football roster, not in the transfer portal, who was clearly contacted by teams in order to sway him and induce him to leave the Pitt football team, the Pitt football program.
By financial means.
I don't think it gets any more clear-cut than that. But we just want the acknowledgement.
That's all we want.
We don't have to... I mean, if he's eligible to play next year and we have to watch him, we have to root against him, whatever. I just want it to be acknowledged that this, he's not leaving because he wants to play with Caleb Williams.
Yeah, he's not leaving because the Pitt program is somehow after an ACC championship undesirable.
Yeah, if Pitt was Syracuse and he was like, I want to go to USC, I'd be like, well, shit, I guess USC is probably a better situation for you.
I think that's the big part of this that has kind of gotten the attention of, you know, everyone across college football. It's that Pitt is a defending, reigning Power 5 conference champion who, by all accounts, has just about brought everyone back outside their Heisman finalist quarterback.
Who they replaced pretty effectively.
Pretty effectively on a loaded roster with a team who has some dark horse sleeper national college football playoff, you know,
aspirations.
Yeah. At the very least, you know, one of the favorites to repeat as ACC champs, go back to New Year's Six Bowl next season, and a blue blood program was able to come in and poach their best player by just throwing a bunch of money at them from the boosters and alumni. So
that's why it's so alarming. And
it's not this some guy at an 8-4 team who went 7-5, 8-4 last year, you know, a Northwestern, a Syracuse, something like that. This is a team who has legitimate aspirations.
I don't know why you would ever want to leave such great journalism schools, though, you know.
Right? Yeah. But, so yeah, everyone's on high alert, and I think most people are on the side of the fence that this is wrong and this isn't how this should work.
So let's...
Okay, real quick, I just refreshed Twitter and he transferred. By he, I mean Joey Yellen to Hawaii.
You bastard.
F*** you, John. But
good for Joe Yellen.
Good for Joe Yellen.
Hawaii for 2 years.
Yeah, he's going to play for Timmy Chang, right? That ought to be fun.
Yeah, whatever. Back to the...
Anyway. No, yeah, I do want that acknowledgement. I would respect USC fans so much more if they were like, yeah, get your bread up. This is how big boys play college football. But USC fans with all these intellectually dishonest arguments is very frustrating. But that's enough about USC. I don't want to think about them for a while. Let's talk about the implications of this going forward, both for Pitt and for college football. I have a very deep, dark worry stemming from this, and I stayed up tossing and turning over it. Because we also, there were rumors of two other Pitt players potentially being poached by other programs, and that is either going to be addressed in our upcoming interview or not. I guess we'll kind of see. But what if other programs with deep pockets view and target Pitt as...
Pitt specifically.
Pitt-esque programs.
No, Pitt specifically as essentially a farming system. Think about it. We are a talent-rich program that has shown an incredible knack for developing talent with little local support and... No offense to our guy Chris Bickle, who's doing everything he can, but a low level of financial support from alumni. When if you combine, you know, so many good players and the ability to develop talent from three stars to guys who we watch on Sundays at NFL, at the NFL level, with the fact that we may not have the means to keep guys here if fatter offers are made, that makes us a sitting duck for the USC's, Texas, Alabama's, Mississippi's, Texas A&M's of the world.
Right. What's to stop, you know, Alabama from saying Pitt bring in a two-star defensive end, a la Pat Jones, Rashad Weaver, develop them into legitimate All-American candidate, and, you know, throw a couple million dollars at them to come play for a year.
Exactly. There are programs with very deep pockets that have shown they aren't very good at developing talent. Penn State, USC, Miami,
Tennessee,
North Carolina, Tennessee. These are all programs that have consistent top-ranked recruiting classes, but can never seem to get over, you know, surpass the expectations of their boosters. What is to stop them from then saying, like, all right, tell that four-star that can't see the field to hit the road. Grab this kid from Pitt. He was a two-star, but he had 12 sacks last year, and he's probably going to be a day one or day two pick in the draft. Go give him significantly more money than, you know, Pitt can afford, you know, Pitt support can offer him.
Yeah, I don't even want to think about it, because it kind of eliminates, you know, the whole competitive aspect of it, the whole point, the whole reason teams like Pitt can compete at that level. You know, you have to recruit well. You have to recruit the non-blue chip guys well, and you have to develop them into players. And Pitt has done a really good job of that in recent years. I think last year's roster and last year's season is a perfect example of that. We didn't have a bunch of 4-5-star guys running around the field. We had maybe a couple. If we want to go back and look up recruiting rankings, but for the most part, those guys out there playing for Pitt last year, come in with the 3-star ranking. You know, don't typically hold the offers from Alabama, Ohio State. We're not beating them out for recruiting, but you know, if they just want to play the waiting game and go poach that guy from us, and after his sophomore year, it becomes a really ugly and unfortunate reality of the college football game.
I mean, it happens with college basketball. Every half-decent player in a mid-major gets offered by, like, Kentucky or Auburn. The best mid-major guys always end up there, like, every year.
Yeah, if you average double digits in the Atlantic 10, you're in the transfer portal and playing Power 5 ball the next year.
Yeah. So being a fan of one of those teams would suck, and it would suck even more if that would happen at the Power 5 level, too, where the good teams can't compete with other good teams because some of the good teams have richer alumni.
Yeah, at what point does this just become a sport for 10 teams to play and everyone else plays in their own league? You know.
So then what's the fix? I think all three of us are very much on board with both NIL and the transfer portal. But what needs to be changed about them in order to keep college football competitive and, you know,
rules?
Well, what sucks is
rules. We can start there. Some rules.
Oh, just rules in general.
Some type of framework. Is there any rules right now? It doesn't seem like it. If Jordan Addison goes to USC and there's no repercussions, there are no rules. There are zero rules in place.
There are none, and that's kind of people's big complaint, because even though the NCAA saw this coming for years and years and years, and, you know, their legislation was getting kicked around by, you know, the U.S. court system, and it wasn't going to hold up that they continue to pay, you know, these athletes nothing because someone invented the term amateur in like 1910. They knew this was coming, and they almost intentionally were underprepared.
Yeah, instead of, you know, putting some type of framework in place, they fought against it and just kind of closed their eyes and hoped that it wouldn't get through, and that this is where we are.
Am I wrong in thinking this will probably just continue to happen even if they do make some changes, and instead of what we just saw happening is every player who is good will enter the portal, quote-unquote, in January, listen to offers, and if they aren't feeling it, just be like, yeah, you know what, I'm good. I'll go back to Pitt. Because effectively, if there were rules like we're talking about, all this would just be happening more visibly, I guess. There's no reason to hide it. It'd be enter the portal, listen to offers, and come May 1st, whoever's the highest is where you're ending up.
I think, and this was how I understood NIL was supposed to work in the first place, that there has to be some justification of value for whatever service or thing is being performed by that player. You can't justify a $1.7 million autograph, you know, deal for Quinn Ewers to go to Ohio State for a semester. You know, it's 30-second spot on a local car dealership TV commercial isn't worth $500,000 on with return on investment. But at the end of the day, you know, who can determine that? Who gets to make up? Who gets to decide what value is and isn't?
Does some rich CEO, can he justify that if he brings back a national championship? Would I pay $3 million for a national championship at Pitt? Probably.
If I had $3 million.
Yeah, but USC isn't paying $3 million for a national championship. They're paying $3 million to score 50 points a game, but as far as I know, they haven't invested nearly enough in the trenches on either side of the ball for them to be that competitive next year, and that's, I think, one of the most frustrating parts of all this is with Addison, we are better than USC next year. If they have Addison, I think they are better than us. I do not think they are significantly better than us. And that's what makes the jump very annoying. But we've beaten that to all hell. So are there any specific rules that could be put in place to stop this from happening in the future? Or is college football going to do that thing where there's a very obvious need for change in the sport and then they wait 40 years?
And they, like, barely fix it. Like, there's a burst pipe. They let it leak for a little while. Stick some duct tape on it. And it stays for like a couple days, and then it bursts again, and there's a whole new problem.
Well, can I go into some specifics on that real quick? Because you, actually, fun fact for you, the listener, the only reason I am a part of this crew is because, if you guys remember, I wanted to write a thread on like college football's unwillingness to change until it's forced to, and you guys gave me the login, and I never logged out.
Yeah, I didn't remember that being the origin story.
Well, okay, so just quick rundown, because this has just been rant on top of rant, but people were dying on the football field from 1869 until about 1908, and college football only changed the rules to make the game safer because sitting president Theodore Roosevelt stepped in and said, if you don't change the game, I'm banning it. And then they did it, and people stopped dying on the football field. And then they were like, oh, you know, it'd be cool. A lot of schools are playing this. What if we did, like, a national championship? And then they were like, yeah. It's true, you know. Teams just play in different bowl games and kind of declare themselves national champions if they want. And then we didn't get a national championship until 1999. Games ended in ties for 150 years until 1995. And then even when we had a national championship, they were like, well, wouldn't it make more sense if we did a playoff? And then, you know, if there was a playoff and you know, we could have a couple teams, you know, stop. You know, the number three team doesn't just get kicked out because we don't think they played enough big schools. And then that took 20 years. And also the whole while, we are not paying these kids who are turning their brains into mashed potatoes to make money for old men. And that doesn't happen until 2020. We aren't talking about we're used to them dragging their feet on like playoff expansion that has taken like 6, 7, 8 years. The cycle of change in college football is decades.
Yeah, I mean, I think a commissioner would be a good start. A commissioner over all the Power Five conferences and or all the FBS schools. It's not just conference by conference. There's some governing body that oversees everything. It's one league with conferences and divisions, but yeah, it's, I mean, we know college football is a mess, but this has just made it worse.
I can't wait to pay players an exorbitant amount of money on NCAA 2024.
Oh, that's gonna be
like fun. You can just buy money in the game by like punching your credit card number. Like, I'll go broke if that's a thing.
What if there's a mode to NCAA 2024 where you aren't a freshman in college, you aren't a head coach starting out at like an FCS school, but you are a wealthy oil tycoon in central Oklahoma,
and you allocate your money based on which recruits and transfer portal players you want? We're giving EA too many free ideas.
Yeah, EA, call us. We have some thoughts. So do we have any...
I mean, we could realistically do this for 5 more hours, but I don't think it's necessary. Fine. Parting thought. Jordan Addison, if this is the last time we've seen you in a Pitt uniform, and we won't see you play at Pitt again, good riddance. And if you come back, can't wait to see you play.
Love you.
This is a deep breathing exercise that will allow your body and mind to become calmer. Go ahead and make yourself comfortable as you gently close your eyes. You'll inhale through your nose for a count of four, hold the breath for a count of seven, and exhale through your mouth for a count of eight. Don't worry if you aren't exact here. Just do your best.
Please welcome onto the show, standing 5'11", 194 pounds, Jim Thorpe finalist and your starting safety of the Pitt Panthers, Brandon Hill. Brandon, how you doing today?
Yes, sir. I'm doing great. Doing great. How are you?
Pretty good. Hanging in there might be a little bit better of a description. Yeah. So, thank you so much for joining us. We're very interested in hearing your Pitt story. You were one of the better prospects in the Central Florida region coming out of high school. How did you become intrigued in Pitt? What did your recruitment process look like, and how did you get here?
My recruitment process, it opened up at the end of my junior year, and Pitt was always radar, as far as my knowledge, receiving the offers. But before the offer, they was always interest. They would show love on Twitter or say good luck with games. So the interest was always there. So I knew like their interest in me was real, and maybe hit me up once in a blue moon, stuff like that. So it was a long process. It was a blessing and at times being that I'm the first person to go to college in my family, going wow. through that, and having the people like around me to help me along the way as far as coaches and my that I was dealing with at the time, family members, and older guys ahead of me. But as soon as I got to Pitt, so fast fell in love with it, fell in love with the city. The coaching staff showed me love as soon as I'm the official visit. And it was just a great experience. We enjoyed ourselves the whole week. And official visit weekend, we had like 13 commits that whole weekend. So that's at Pittsburgh and their football facilities and what they can do for their players. Stand for that. And I'm blessed, and I don't regret this decision at all.
Well, we're very happy to have you here. And I think something really interesting your career is the way you got sent into action. Mid-season, Paris Ford opted out, and you were thrown into action. What was that like? Were you nervous being or getting your first start midway through a season? Or how that
stepping in for someone with as much of a on-the-field reputation as Paris Ford?
Yes, sir, most definitely. I was ready for the moment. I was confident in my training and my preparation for the game. Always be ready when your number's called. That's what I always just try to be, because it could happen any game. And someone, God forbid, someone gets injured, or in that case situation, he did opt out, stepping in and just being ready to fill that role. And I feel like the guys around me, older guys around me, helping me always along the way, even in the film room and out on the Pramlin and Paris Ford, to help me along coming in as a freshman and just teach me about the college football scene. So being playing behind those guys and seeing how I did things right, I wasn't nervous about a transition because I was confident and the work I put in with the guys ahead of me.
Yeah, I don't know why I asked if you were nervous, because you stepped in and you made plays right away. That was your first game. You had that pick six, correct? As a starter.
Yes, sir.
Florida State, yeah. I think you had a game-high eight tackles, right?
Yes, sir. That was actually my dream school, like growing in middle school. And I had a Florida State book bag, the Florida State extra camp in eighth grade, ninth grade. So I've always been a Noles fan. But that game meant a lot to me to get that first start and to, like you said, get a pick six. Also recorded a game high, so I'm always going to remember that game. I love that game.
So did Florida State recruit you at all out of high school?
They did not recruit me at all. I didn't really get any Florida schools like that. I think the only Florida school recruited by was FAU and FIU at the time. And FAU was actually my first offer. I got FIU soon after that. But other than that, those were the only – and then, I'm sorry, I also made the offers. But other than that, not really any Florida schools outside of those four recruiting me.
So is it – gratifying to beat up on a school that you might have been interested in attending but didn't give you the same love that you were hoping for?
Yeah, most definitely, because you're seeing what you missed out on, but that they need for me to make their team successful, and I'm just so blessed granted me the offer, and that I was able to make this decision for a great career year, and I guess I don't regret this decision at all.
Absolutely. So you mentioned that you had a career year. You were a Jim Thorpe semifinalist this year. You had an interesting trajectory because 247, you were the class of 2019. 247 only had you ranked as the 50th best safety in the class of 2019. But last year, you were a semifinalist for an award given to some of the best defensive backs in the country. What happened in those 3 years to allow you to get to that point? What happened behind the scenes to take you from, you know, top 50 in your position to top four in your or top whatever in your position group?
Just putting the work in, putting your head down and grinding, getting after it. I came in with a great group of guys in my 2019 class, coming in with those guys and just putting in the work that we did. And just grinding, but not losing sight of what the end goal is, and just trying to keep getting better every day. We see here he harps on getting 3% better every day, and that's also a way to walk in it every day. How can you do something better? You can always be better at something. So set and leading into having that mindset into every practice, every game, and every season. That's the mindset around the city of Pittsburgh, actually. So just having that mindset brought me here today.
Well, it seems like you have that mindset as well as a number of other guys on that defense who came in and kind of the same
record
as you. How excited are you to take the field with all of them this year? Basically, everybody's back from last year, all kinds of preseason award watch lists. That sounds like a lot of fun being on that defense.
Yeah, it is. It's so fun. We're going to be a fun defense to watch. You're going to see racing to the ball, making plays, having fun, electric energy. Playing with all these guys, it's amazing. It makes my job easier out there, playing with guys Elijah can't see. So just having those guys on the defense is anything better than that.
I got to ask you this because I think playing safety would be a really fun position, but I'm like 5'9", 150 soaking wet. What is more fun to you, playing a big hit and forcing a fumble or getting an interception?
See, look, you know how I practice, how I play. I need that big hit. So I can take a lot. You feel me? I need that big hit. So they know I'm here. You feel me? So, yeah. So probably, definitely. I need to go get that money this year, though. So
yeah, the big hit, that's what we're eyeing up. But how do you balance, you know, wanting to
make someone know you're there, and the very sensitive targeting rules in college. We saw your predecessor, Paris Ford, had a little bit of trouble with the targeting. How do you balance, wanting to let a receiver know that you're there and that they can't come over the middle on you, and also, trying to ensure that you stay in the football game?
It's hard nowadays that because I think now they're taking targeting. So just trying to keep your head out of the hit and just really more textbook tackle technique, chest up, head up. What our coach Weaver Young and Mighty Mites to formally tackle. So just reiterating those fundamentals that you shouldn't be caught with targeting.
Well, you had a problem with that. Some ticky-tacky ones went the other way against you. How bad does it suck being thrown out for something as questionable as that? And then, I guess you can stay on the field now. You don't have to go to the locker room anymore, right?
Yeah, you get to stay on the field. They caught me a couple times. Once last year when I first thing, once this recent past year. So, it's hard, just getting to be out there with your boys making plays. Because, every play you want to be, the play you're not in, is that's the play, you could have made you feel me? So, definitely is, but I feel like the refs can take the game. I feel like the refs take the game in the best of their, so, it keeps the players safe, but, yeah, it's definitely hard, though. It's definitely hard watching and just, knowing that you, if you were out of half or the second half, just know you can't go in at all.
So if Brandon Hill was the commissioner of college football, what would you make any changes to the way targeting is handled?
I feel like... Yes, I feel like, because like I said, nowadays there's any head-on collision. And then I feel like head-to-head collision. Yeah, that's targeting. Coming in, if it's not intentional, because you can tell when there's something intentional and then somebody is a player trying to disrupt the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they should do more of the play. Instead of just the whole play as itself. So as far as I feel like we'll be straight either way.
Mm. So we talked a little bit about this upcoming year and how excited you are about the unit that's going to be stepping out there. A lot of guys returning, and then, the young players that are stepping in, we've heard phenomenal things about going into the season, whether it's DeShields or Kamara or any of the young guys coming up on the defensive line. What is a name of somebody that we may not be thinking of that is going to make a major impact this season on that Pitt defense?
On the Pitt defense, like you said, this guy's coming up, but I really Bengali Kamara. I feel like for Bengali Kamara this year, I feel like he's gonna have a great year. He's athletic. He thinks when he's out there, this first year, I feel like he's gonna do great. He's fun to play with. He's also gonna add another fun part and fun side to the defense. So that's one thing that stands out to me, Bengali Kamara, most definitely.
Yeah, we got a little bit of a taste of him towards the end of the season, and he looked ready in the spring game, just seeing him out there. Yeah. That looks like a football player.
Yeah, he's been ready. He's been ready to put in the work. Yeah.
Well, speaking of being ready to play, are you ready for the backyard brawl? We got 121 days from the day we're recording. You're not a Pittsburgh native, but are you aware of the hatred behind that rivalry and how big it is for both fan bases?
Oh, yeah. I'm not a Pittsburgh native, like you said, but I'm aware of the that is going to be a big one. It's going to be a great game, great atmosphere, and I can't wait. I've never played in. Farmer is going to be a lot of fun, a lot of competition, maybe a lot of back. It is going to be a lot of nice. So just to be prepared. But now we're ready. We're locked in for the opener. Yeah, it's going to be.
Has Coach Narduzzi played Country Roads during practice to get you guys annoyed yet?
I think we had a workout during one of the workouts that our head strength coach played like one of their songs and a lot like a hard finisher workout too. So like playing this song while we're in pain so we can build that. So just doing that. So doing things like that, getting us ready for the game. It's a big rivalry and we would love to come out with the win. So we're ready to work, putting them ready.
Is there anyone else next season that you guys really have circled on the schedule? I mean, obviously, the return of the Backyard Brawl is a big deal. And then anytime we play Miami or Virginia Tech, big one. Is there another game you guys really have circled on the calendar for this year?
I think we're ready for every Saturday that we're about to do this. We're about to have this. Like you said, we want to, because we feel like we have a target on our back this year going, and we had last year. So we're just ready to repeat, this year, off season, ready to work with that same goal and to exceed the goals we did last year, everybody.
Awesome. Well, we love to hear it because, the expectations are high in Pittsburgh, and it's been a while.
Yes, sir.
I'm sure you're aware it's been a while since Pitt fans have, had a season where we went into it with this high of expectations. Mm-hmm. The program had its struggles for 40 years. So it's, we're really excited to hear that you guys are excited and that, the target is on the moon,
Yes, sir. Most
so we did want to ask what we've kind of dubbed the $1 million question, or maybe the $3 million question. So we've heard Pat Narduzzi talk about how NIL has changed the game for coaches. You have to not only recruit high schoolers, but you have to recruit guys in the portal, and now you have to get guys recruit them to stay on your team. How different has it been from the veteran player perspective? How has the transfer portal and, that aspect of trying to get guys in the portal to come over or, sometimes in some capacities, keep your own teammates on the team. How has it changed for you guys?
It definitely brings a different aspect to college football as far as finding out where they want to really go and what's the best opportunities. It also puts another to go to that school. So, it's definitely different. But I feel like a veteran player now, I feel like just have to stay the course right now, just focus on getting better, focus on the games ahead, because everything will place if you do that. And that things that you want to, that you want any rush or any like extra put on it. So just do to yourself and your abilities and just believe in that. And I say you should be able to do whatever you want.
Is that something that players talk about though in the locker room, or is that kind of like outside of the locker room? It's kind of on your own private kind of thing.
Not really in the locker room, because like I said, we try to, like you said, just work every day and just the outside noise, just keep everything in-house and just work from. But yeah, probably, yeah, most likely it's outside noise, probably seeking in, but we don't, just try to keep focus, keep the peace, and
I gotcha. So, with how tight-knit of a team Pitt is and with how new some of the transfer portal and NIL stuff is, would you, if someone were to, explore other options, if a really good opportunity came their way, would the team be more likely to root on a guy to, you know, chase that bag and you know, chase a once in a lifetime opportunity? Or are you more of a team oriented mindset that like, no, we're building something here, you should want to stay here? And how do you balance those, I assume, conflicting feelings?
I feel like with me, I'm a loyal dude. So like, I've gone to four schools, one middle school, one high school, and now one college. So now I've never transferred out of any switch schools. Like, I feel like once I start something, I want to finish something there. You feel me? So But I'm more on that side. So wherever, like I said, wherever position I'm in, there, and just keep adding on to whatever situation I'm in. I don't look to locate or any other thing like that. I feel like I make the best out of any situation. So I look at it like that.
Awesome. Well, we're really lucky, you know, as a program to have someone with your dedication to Pitt and, you know, that the coaching staff and the team. And we're incredibly excited to see you guys take the field this year. Regardless of anything, we think that this is one of the best teams Pitt has rolled out in decades. So we're really excited to see what you guys bring.
Yes, sir. We're excited too. We're excited.
I actually have one more question about the University of Southern California and the transfer portal. How does Keaton Slovis look as the starting safety? What do you think of him and Nick Patty, who are battling out in camp? What do each of them bring to the table that's different?
Yes, sir. They're both playing. Last spring, they both played phenomenal, competing every day with each other. It's like nobody can get ahead. Nobody can get, feel me, too far behind. They're out there competing. Now both of them are doing it, and I can't wait to see who wins this one. But I feel like we will be great. We'll be our line of center.
Well, that's something we love to hear. Last question. Who in that receiving group is the hardest to cover for you? Who do you hate to go across from the most?
Hardest right now probably would be our new transfer, Kanate. He came in ready to work. He with moves, breaking down mid routes. And I feel like that's Amara who I feel like is gonna have a great year this year. Probably him though, staying from just getting his moves down. But he came in. I'm excited to see how well he will do this year for us.
Yeah, he put on a crazy move in the spring game, first play. So a little taste of what the receiving room can bring to the table this year.
For sure. Yes, sir.
That's really, really exciting to hear. I think something tells me we might just need him to perform this year. So that's awesome to hear. Well, Brandon, yes, we can't thank you enough for your time. We are unbelievably excited to see, you know, the product you guys put out next year and what the defense is looking like. I think we were talking about it yesterday. We think that this year we go back to holding teams to, you know, we aren't going to need to score 40 to beat a team. I think we're going to be the most dangerous defense the ACC has to offer, and you're going to be right at the middle of that.
Yes, sir. You know it. Yes, sir. Let's do it.
Awesome. Well, thank you again. You know, get some good R&R the next 2 weeks while you're back home in Florida, and hope you come back ready to roll.
Yes, sir. Thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate you.
Absolutely. Hail to Pitt.
Hail to Pitt.
Yes, sir. Hail to Pitt. You know it.
Thank you to Pitt safety Brandon Hill for taking the time to join us during what I'm sure was a very chaotic week. Thank you to our sponsor, Rendine Consulting. And thank you to my great co-hosts, Squid and Dylan, for another phenomenal episode. If you like what you heard, feel free to like, subscribe, comment, rate 5 stars wherever you listen to your podcasts. And follow us on Twitter at The Loyal Sons. Next week, we're back with Cincinnati Bengals long snapper Cal Adomaitis and continued coverage of the transfer drama. Jordan, if you're listening, please call home if you change your mind. And hail, Loyal Sons of Pittsburgh.